Court will proceed to the fourth case, the United States versus Gant. Ms. Dyson.
May it please the court, Mr. Bass. My name is Carol Dyson, and I represent the appellant in this case, A.J. Gant. This is an appeal from a criminal conviction. In a criminal case, every defendant has a right to confront the witnesses. And a necessary and integral and vital part of that right is an opportunity to demonstrate to the jury any witness bias. In this case, A.J. Gant was denied that right in his criminal trial, and as such, he was denied a right to a fair trial. Credibility of the witnesses is particularly important in this case. In this case, A.J. Gant was charged with a felon in possession of a firearm. There was no other evidence to connect him to the gun. There was no fingerprints. He was not shown to be the owner of the gun. So eyewitness testimony was crucial in this case. In a case like this, where eyewitness testimony is, in fact, very crucial, I believe that the jury should have an opportunity to hear any possible bias that any witness may have in testifying in that case. The facts of this case are as such. A.J. Gant owned a house on Church Street where he let his daughter live rent-free. It was on two conditions. One, that she not use any drugs, that she had not allowed drug dealers to sell and use drugs in her home, and that she not allow any drug trafficking around the home. There was an ongoing dispute between A.J. and his daughter, Angelia, and a friend of hers, Daniel Clark. And that dispute surrounded the drug activity in the neighborhood. At trial, the government files a motion in limine asking the district court to prevent the defendant from raising these issues at trial. Angelita Gant and Daniel Clark were witnesses for the government. I believe that the district court's granting of the government's motion of limine was in error. I believe that the jury had an absolute right to hear every possible reason why a witness would testify in a particular manner. And in this case, I think the reasons were particularly compelling. Angelina Gant and Daniel Clark had every reason to get A.J. out of the way in this case. He threatened their economic security, and he threatened, most importantly, their freedom. In an attempt to stop some of the drug trafficking in the neighborhood, Mr. Gant contacted the police. He put up a fence around his area. In fact, in an offer of proof at trial, Mr. Gant showed that Daniel Clark had, in fact, been arrested on three different occasions in that area for drug trafficking. And so it was really important that the jury hear this in evaluating the testimony of Daniel Clark and the testimony of Angela Gant. As I said, there was no other evidence to connect Mr. Gant to the weapon, so a conviction in this case did, in fact, depend upon eyewitness testimony.
Didn't the judge modify his ruling and allow some of that evidence?
He allowed some of that evidence. He allowed to show that there was a dispute between Angela and Mr. Gant. And that dispute was the evidence that came in was particularly narrow, that she not used drugs, you know, but she not allow other people to loiter around the apartment. But I think a far greater motive to tailor your testimony to get rid of your enemy is loss of money from drug sales and the possibility that you're going to be sent to jail. I think that that's a far greater motive. And I think that although the judge allowed some motive testimony or some biased testimony, it was not enough in this case.
He also allowed some testimony about an altercation between your client and the other witness, Clark. Isn't that right?
But it was the testimony at the time that Mr. Gant was supposedly in possession.
Earlier in the day, though, Wasn't there an altercation earlier in the day that was admitted?
Right. But not the reason for that altercation. Again, I think it is important that Mr. Clark is selling drugs in the neighborhood, and Mr. Gann is trying to put a stop to that, which could mean Mr. Clark going to prison in this case. So I think the fact that the judge allowed evidence of a dispute is not enough. I think that the jury had a right to know, and Mr. Gant had a right to present the full nature of that dispute. Additionally, I believe that a criminal defendant in a case has a right to present a full picture to the jury. He has a right to present motive evidence.
That all may be true in general terms. What was the specific defense in this case?
The defense in this case is that Mr. Gant, Mr. Clark and Angelia Gant had animosity toward Mr. Gant. When Mr. Gant came back, he saw the loitering going on, the suspected drug dealing. He always carried a metal pipe with him because he was afraid for his life. He was afraid that he could get attacked by one of these individuals. I believe that he had seen them in possession of weapons. And so he had that pipe when he confronted them.
So the defense would have been what?
The defense is not... Mr. Gant's position at trial was that he, in fact, did not possess a weapon, that what he had in his hand was a metal pipe, that the witnesses fabricated their testimony in an effort to get him out of the way.
So they said it was a gun
when it was really a
pipe, except
That's
there's
right.
a neutral, disinterested witness across the street who said it was a gun, wasn't there, and a police officer responding to the scene
right.
who saw that it was a gun in the hands of your client and witnessed him dispose of it?
But there was also testimony from the disinterested witness across the street that he didn't know the difference between a revolver and an automatic, that he didn't see the body of the gun. He saw only what was the barrel, which could have been the piece of pipe. With respect to the police officer, I believe his testimony, the jury could have actually found that the police officer did not, in fact, see the gun. I mean, you have four witnesses who are saying that there was a gun. And if the testimony is shaky on three of those witnesses, it's entirely possible that the jury could have found that no gun was actually found in that area or that Mr. Gant didn't, in fact, possess a weapon. So I think it is important that the jury have bias with respect. I mean, obviously, they could have said, it doesn't really matter what the other three witnesses said, but this one police officer says that he had a gun. But they could have also said, these three witnesses are pretty shaky, so I don't believe, you know, that the police officer was correct in his testimony.
Okay, so the defense is that Angelia and this guy named Clark are lying when they said it was a gun.
Right.
That your client hit them with.
Right.
And the reason they're lying is because he was trying to put a stop to their drug activity in the neighborhood?
That's correct.
Okay.
Additionally, in denying in granting the government's motion in limine, the district court as well as the government in its argument relied a great deal on U.S. v. Lane in stating that that testimony was not, they characterized it as motive testimony and said that it wasn't relevant to whether or not Mr. Gant knowingly possessed the gun. I think that that reliance was misplaced. This court in U.S. v. Lane said that it would allow such testimony had the testimony been raised to show that he never physically had a gun. And that was the sole purpose in which we were raising this testimony in this case. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. So I will ask that this court find that the district court erred in granting the government's motion in limine in this case and reverse the conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Mr. Bass.
Good morning, Your Honors. Timothy Bass on behalf of the United States. May it please the court. Your Honors, each of the issues that are raised in this appeal involve the district court's exercise of its discretion, for which reversal requires abuse of that discretion. And the only thing the district court did in this case was prevent if a straightforward gun trial being turned into a trial about the good acts, prior good acts of a defendant and the prior bad acts of government witnesses. The first claim that was raised by the defendant as to why this drug activity evidence should be admitted was that a defendant has a right to tell his story. That's repeated here. A defendant has a right to explain every possible reason why a witness is going to testify. Well, that's not the law. It's not. It's never been the law. And this court held as such in Lane as to a defendant's right to present evidence has to be relevant. And there was no relevance to the defendant's evidence as to his alleged efforts to prevent drug trafficking to possibly explain why his choice of weapon would have been a pipe as opposed to a gun. And Your Honor is correct. The judge did modify his ruling once this bias allegation was raised later on after the district court initially ruled on the government's motion and said, you may present evidence of bias. And there's clearly evidence of bias that was presented. And keep in mind, the testimony of Angelia Gant, who was the defendant's daughter, was not disputed by the defendant. All she testified to was that the defendant hit her with an hard object, which the defendant did not dispute. So he's now arguing to this court that I was denied my right to present evidence of bias of a witness regarding testimony I did not dispute. And as to Mr. Clark, his testimony was also inconsistent, which was clearly laid out by the defendant in cross-examination. And Your Honor was correct that there were two independent witnesses that saw the defendant with in possession of a firearm, one of whom was a police officer who saw the defendant drop it, went over right after that, and seized the gun. So there was clear evidence of bias that was allowed to be presented by the defendant, and the only thing the district court did was prevent the defendant from getting into irrelevant evidence as to why he was in the neighborhood. Why he was in that neighborhood was irrelevant. What was relevant was whether he possessed a gun. And as to the two remaining claims regarding the admission of the defendant's prior conviction, this court has affirmed such decisions on repeated occasions. There's nothing about this case that establishes the district court abused its discretion. And finally, the missing witness instruction was not appropriate. For those reasons, Your Honors, we would ask that the conviction be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bass. Ms. Dyson?
You know, every time there's testimony to be presented that's prejudicial to a criminal defendant, we somehow believe that the jury possessed the wisdom of the ages. However, when the testimony may be potentially prejudicial to the government, we feel that the jury is not able to consider testimony and evidence for its proper purpose. I believe that in this case we do the jury a disservice. I think that the jury would have used this evidence, this testimony, to the issue of witness bias. And although the government and the district court takes a position that that particular evidence was not relevant to any issue in this case, what is more important and more relevant than witness bias in a case when that's all of the evidence that's presented? So again, I would ask that this court would find that the district court abused its discretion in granting the government's motion in limine and reverse the conviction.
Right. Our thanks to both counsel. Ms. Dyson, in addition to that, I want to extend the appreciation of the court for your accepting this appointment and ably representing Ms. Gant.
Thank you, Your Honor.